Good morning, everybody. It's Monday. Time to take a look forward through this busy week. Dylan?
Our government.
Bailout.
Your government.
Energy resources.
Healthcare.
Iraq and Afghanistan.
Global financial recession.
The work that needs to be done.
What's going on, indeed? The agenda this week is a crowded mix of domestic economics, complicated foreign policy, and a meeting of the richest nations on the planet that may turn out to be as much of a political bullseye for them as a productive strategy session on what's to happen in the global economy. Joining us are James Surowiecki, business columnist for The New Yorker from Washington. James, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me on.
And Marcus Mabry, our pal and international business editor at our partner, The New York Times. Marcus, thanks for being with you.
Good morning.
Sort of Marcus Mabry Monday, I think. I love the alliteration.
Triple M, yeah.
So we begin with anybody want the GM job? Rick Wagoner is out. Obama announced, well, it doesn't really announce it, but apparently it was a condition of rolling out the auto restructuring plan. But here's the president on Face the Nation yesterday.
Everybody's having problems, even Toyota and other very profitable companies. And so what we're trying to let them know is that we want to have a successful auto industry, U.S. auto industry. We think we can have a successful U.S. auto industry, but it's got to be one that's realistically designed to weather this storm and to emerge at the other end much more lean, mean, and competitive than it currently is.
So, James Surowiecki, I love your column in The New Yorker because it always has a sort of a different view of stuff that's in the headlines, economically speaking. I'm wondering if we can test those assumptions here this morning. Do we really need to have a successful auto industry? Is this more a jobs program for the people of Detroit? And if Barack Obama really wants a sort of energy-efficient car industry to exist, are these the guys to do it? James?
Well, I actually think my counterintuitive take would be counterintuitive to yours in the sense that I actually think that I would like the United States to have a successful auto industry, and I actually think it is important from a jobs perspective, particularly right now. But, you know, Obama has effectively, I think, decided that the auto industry, as it's currently constituted, can't really go on because the important thing that happened is not just that Wagner was fired, but that essentially, I think today, this morning around 11, Obama is going to announce that they basically are giving GM 60 days and then probably going to put them into bankruptcy. So they basically have kind of called an end to the bailouts, or at least to the open-ended bailouts. So, you know, it sounds to me like what the Obama administration has decided is that actually in some ways, I don't know if your particular take is exactly right, but that the way the auto industry exists right now, just it isn't really in a position to kind of deal with, you know, the new future or, for that matter, even the present.
See, I'm the host of the show, James. It's just a question to me. I have no take, baby. I have no take. So, Marcus Mabry, you know, I was talking with a lawyer last night who was very involved in the Lehman Brothers bankruptcy, essentially the dissolution of Lehman Brothers. And if GM goes into the bankruptcy court, it's not going to be any bloodier and crazier than that. So in some sense, if James is right, the government is sort of ready for a GM bankruptcy. It's not as bad as maybe we all think.
Well, you know, two things. The argument always was from GM's perspective. Number one, we can't go into bankruptcy because no one is going to buy a car. And Chrysler made the same argument. No one's going to buy a car from a company that's going bankrupt. So we can't increase our sales in this horrible, dismal time if no one's going to buy our cars.
What we learned is nobody's going to buy a car, period.
Well, exactly. Anyway, so the government's now saying, you know what, we'll guarantee all the cars, all the GM cars, we'll guarantee them. We will help supervise a bankruptcy. It's going to be an orderly bankruptcy, nothing like the dissolution of Lehman, for instance. And so they're saying that they hope that that will be enough now to put on the spot the UAW and the bondholders for GM. They said, now that we've gotten Rick Wagner's head on the platter, now you guys have to make concessions if you expect, you know, this company to go on at all.
Marcus, what do you make of the Rick Wagner thing? Is this a way of insulating themselves from the AIG fallout? If you lead with the beheaded GM, suddenly you're not going to have some story of somebody getting a decent salary coming to you know, sort of blow up in their faces?
Well, you know, they had to do it, politically speaking. They had to be, management really had to make concessions, and this was the ultimate concession. And otherwise, there was a political problem out here of people saying, well, you're rewarding the guys who've made these mistakes over decades and really hurt this company, and he's been in charge since 2000. But then secondly, they also needed to do it to bring this pressure on the bondholders and the UAW. you to say, look, we've extracted a pound of flesh from management. Now you guys have to give two.
James, the headline here really, I think, is Chrysler. It's fiat or nothing. Is that a careful read?
Yeah, that seems about right. It seems pretty clear that they're essentially just going to throw Chrysler to the wind, and if fiat wants to catch it and keep it afloat, then it can, and if not, it sounds very much like Chrysler will go under. I mean, I actually been, from way back, I was a supporter of the bailout, and especially in the fall when the Bush administration did it, because especially at that time, I just thought in terms of the economy as a whole, it would just have been a massive trauma to the economy, essentially. And I think that some kind of stimulus package that included a bailout would have been a good idea, but Chrysler was always the one company that it made kind of dubious sense to do this for, both because it was in far more trouble, it was far less important from a jobs perspective, and it was owned by a private equity company where you thought, you know, these guys have, Cerberus has more than enough money to put into Chrysler if, in fact, they think it's viable, and there's no good reason for the taxpayers to be doing that. So that part of it especially, I think, is pretty unsurprising.
Well, after AIG, bailing out a private equity firm is probably not going to be viable. Friday, since it's the beginning of the month of April, we're going to get a look at unemployment numbers. You want to look ahead there, James?
Well, I don't think, obviously, this will not yet have an impact, but I expect the unemployment rate to be, you know, well above 8.5%, potentially even higher than that. But, you know, I think last couple of weeks, we've seen not quite a deceleration. I mean, we've seen basically sort of a stabilization. I mean, every week it's around 650,000 new claims. So, you know, I think the numbers are just going to keep going up for overall employment. I don't think we're going to see good news on the employment front probably for another 6 to 7 months,
right,
if then.
Well, we'll hold you to that.
Yeah.
Marcus Mabry, let's shift gears for a second. It was an extraordinary rollout of the Afghanistan-Pakistan policy when Barack Obama and his entire national security team faced reporters and gave this speech about what needs to happen now in Afghanistan, Pakistan, dealing with India. You know, Al-Qaeda was mentioned. Hamid Karzai was definitely not mentioned, the president of Afghanistan. Who was this a signal to? It seems to me, number one, it's a signal that the Rumsfeld era is ending and the president is running the show. Who's going to get that message, Marcus?
Well, you know, I think it was a signal to the NATO allies who are helping us in Afghanistan, as well as to our opponents in Afghanistan and to Al-Qaeda, which seems to be uniting its factions against us, knowing that we're going to be sending thousands more American troops there. I think, you know, we'll be seeing this week more talks about Afghanistan on the global stage. I think the administration went to lay on its card, put its cards on the table for our allies to say, we're committed to this. We're committed to doing it, though, in a different way from our predecessors. And we're still committed to a form of success, a more narrow success, perhaps, than what the Afghanistan policy had been before. And we are very aware of how steep this mountain is to climb.
And that discussion will begin tomorrow at The Hague. United Nations and NATO members are going to be talking about Afghanistan and what to do about the Taliban. But the big meeting, the big international meeting, James, and you refer to this in your piece in The New Yorker that's on the stands this week, is the G20 summit. And the difference between what it constitutes a stimulus package in Europe and what constitutes a stimulus package in the United States will very much be on the agenda there, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I think that Europe and the United States have taken not completely different, but very, very different approaches to stimulus and have very different attitudes about what should be done right now and going forward. And I think if you expect a global stimulus package to come out of the G20, which is what I think Barack Obama would like, some kind of coherent approach to amping up the world economy in terms of governments committing to spending. I just don't think that's going to happen. The Europeans have been very clear they're not interested in spending much more money from a government perspective, and they actually have been much more cautious, as always, on interest rates. So they just have very different approaches, very different attitude, I think, toward economic growth, toward inflation, than we do.
Marcus Mabry, the meeting with the Queen, G20 leaders are going to be hanging out with the Queen as this meeting begins. Is that a good idea as protesters descend on London?
Well, you know, That's a purely ceremonial part, I think, of this meeting. I don't know.
But G may stand for guilty as far as the international community is concerned.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see. Look, I mean, this is going to be G20 week. This is going to be the big story of the week. You got American TV anchors who are heading over there to actually, you know, anchor from the G20. This has never happened before. It underscores the importance of what's happening. But also what we're going to see here is kind of Barack Obama's popularity. He's more popular than all his other G20 heads of state versus America's lack of popularity.
Something to watch. James Surowiecki, financial columnist for The New Yorker, and Marcus Mabry, international business editor for The New York Times, our partner. Thanks, guys.